The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
Not because they're easy,
but
we
because
they
are
hard. Start by 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our Sunday Space Show program, and I apologize for the delay and the feedback problem. It is fixed. It is on me. This is 100% my mistake. I do apologize. Many of you may recall that I told you I was doing a coast-to-coast segment with George Norrie Wednesday night for 2 hours. Well, I reset my sound settings so I could have my own recording of the program. And I forgot to change those sound settings back. And what those settings do is allow the bleeding into the live stream. But with George and Coast to Coast, I don't do any live streaming at all. I'm just recording. I forgot to change it back. So it's on me, and I apologize. And Holly, I apologize. But we're ready for around an hour program, and unless you guys want to keep it going. A couple of announcements before I introduce our guest. Our toll-free number is 866-687-7223. We do have a full week planned for the Space Show, and all of the newsletters are done and on the website. So the Mars Society and their big gig coming up is featured with James Burke on Tuesday. Hotel Mars, we're talking to one of the NASA scientists who is looking at organics being found on Mars with the new Mars rover and Perseverance. And that'll be on Hotel Mars Wednesday. Joel Sercell, who's the head of Transastris, with us on Friday. And Frank Slazer is the CEO of the Coalition for Deep Space Exploration. He is going to be with us on Sunday. There will be no show on Tuesday of next week, and I will not be able to do Hotel Mars, and that is because I'm doing more dental work, and I will be taken out of pocket for a couple of days. But other than that, the newsletters are up and running, and everything is current, and we're happy to welcome you to our Sunday Space Show program. So again, the toll-free number is 866-687-7223. You can figure out how to do all of the streaming or listening on our different formats, live show, podcasting, and archives on our website by clicking the button in the upper left corner, Listen Live, and that will give you all of the information. But if you need a little help or troubleshooting, please let me know, and I will be very, very glad to help you on that. And the other thing I can tell you is that we are, a 501c3 nonprofit with one giant leap foundation. And listeners just like you, you're the ones who keep the Space Show going. You support it. And we're very, very appreciative of that. And we do need your support. We'll be coming up on our annual campaign soon. But it's never too early to support the Space Show. So as a nonprofit, if you are paying federal taxes, you get a tax deduction, and check with your state to see if you get a state deduction. For the moment, we're still a California nonprofit. That will soon change to a Nevada nonprofit. And again, if you have any questions, do let me know. There's a huge PayPal button at the top of our homepage. That is the easiest way to support us. If you want to use a check, it's made payable to 1 ONE Giant Leap Foundation, and it mails to the Space Show at our Las Vegas headquarters, which are on our website and also our PayPal address. But again, if you need any assistance or can't find the Las Vegas address, please do let me know. And then we also do sponsors and billboard advertisers. Both get banner ads running across our homepage, which they can change anytime they want. On longer formatted shows, I read a sponsor or billboard advertiser's message. And on the shorter segment shows like we're planning today, I shout out to our great sponsors, and we certainly appreciate their support. We wouldn't be doing the show without Northrop Grumman, the Space Foundation, Astrox, AIAA, Moonworks, Celestis, the National Space Society, and Dr. Ben Arroyo, who has two great books on developing lunar resources and lunar habitation. Remember, if you buy the books through his banner ad, Amazon will donate a portion of the sales to the space show, and that is always nice. If you want information about the sponsorship and banner ads program moving into 2023, please email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. And Holly Malir is our guest today, and her program is called STEAM Space Educational Outreach. And you can find the links to it on our website. And she is the CEO and founder of STEAM Space Educational Outreach. She has more than 20 years in the education industry, and she has acted as an education advocate, consultant, coordinator, event director. She founded the first Cities in Space event. That was back in 2015, and they've been doing it continually since. I have her full bio on the website for the space show. I would urge you to take a look at it. We would much rather talk to Holly rather than read about her. So welcome to the space show, Holly. How are you? And thank you for being our guest.
Hi there. Thank you. I'm doing great. I am so excited to be on the show today, and thanks for having me.
Well, you were recommended to us from people who heard about you at ISBC, which seems like ages ago, right? And but many of our listeners don't make it to ISBC. So introduce us to STEAM Space, okay?
Yes, I'd love to. So STEAM Space Education Outreach, we have been going since 2015. We became formally a 501c3 in 2017. And when we first started, we were invited by an adult space education conference to start a competition for children. We were originally thinking 6th through 12th grade. And so I started the first Cities in Space competition. But as I began to watch, you know, what the adults were getting with exhibitors and speakers and all sorts of amazing things, I already had many plans for what I wanted Cities in Space and STEAM Space to be. And so, you know, began building this competition and conference for students. And I think, you know, the very first conference, you know, we held with Cities in Space, I was hoping for maybe 75 students here in Austin, Texas. And at 500 students, we were being called to please shut it down. There was such a wide interest in being part of this wonderful space competition on not just settlement design, but on a lot of other things as well. And we've just been really fortunate to grow and expand over this past 7 years to consistently host 500 on-site students and teachers at our Cities in Space events, but we've also begun having our STEAM Space Academy. We've held leadership summits and Cities in Space workshops in other countries. So we've just had a really great time getting students involved from across the globe and the United States and in a high concentration in Texas. And it's just been a wild ride and a wonderful journey, and we're still growing.
Is it that space settlement is so widely known about with school kids in the United States and Texas and around the world? Or what else do you attribute to such an enormous support and interest?
That's a really great question. I feel like I have so many answers for that. I don't think space settlement design competitions in Texas, per se, were, like, hugely, vastly known. However, I will say there are some really, really amazing individuals out there who run, you know, strictly STEM-oriented space settlement design competitions and have for decades and have done incredibly well. So there is that population out there that did know. But I think we were also, you know, a little different. And, you know, I'm happy to dive into some of the reasons why of this. But we really focus a lot not just on STEM, though we believe, you know, the STEM and the academic side is crucial, imperative, and critical. But we really focus on STEAM, incorporating the arts, but also we want cities and space and all of our other events and workshops to talk about what is going to really be needed for a thriving community off-world, which also includes things like space law, space medicine. You know, we're going to need historians to preserve, you know, humanity's records and also, you know, hold on to old ideologies and help create new ideologies. We're going to need artists and musicians. We'll need art for design utilization, but we're also going to need those community building things. So we are what I like to call a progressive education competition and conference. So we let all of the students come in and they all have the same requirements, but then when they come in together and they're judged by professional industry judges, they get to choose what topic they really want to focus on for their project. So the kids that are solely focused on engineering or architecture, they're going to also hear about the students who are looking at space medicine, you know, agriculture, law, all these other things. And they're going to get to see this wide picture of what humanity needs to grow and thrive off-world. And this is helping us to support the pipeline of this new industry that's just massive and coming our way, but also to really give these kids opportunities to troubleshoot and really form a movement and have community and learn how to make things better here while they're learning about how to make it different and better as they reach out there. Because, you know, it's these kids sitting in the classrooms right now, the little ones included, they're the ones that are going to be going and really leading the way to have these off-world civilizations and communities, right? So I think the interest has been great because they're, you know, we can pull in so many different interests, and then they all end up, a lot of them end up really diving into the STEM aspects of everything for space.
So you're 6 through 12 primarily, correct?
We are 6 through 12 primarily. That is the competing age range. We do allow about 100 fourth grade students on site from some gifted and talented Title I schools around Texas to come, and they have to do their presentations just like the older kids do, but they get honorable mentions. They don't officially compete. And when we had to go virtual, which, you know, that was, I feel like I went back to graduate school learning how to have a virtual competition. I remember telling our wonderful team, oh, you know, it'll probably be like 75% of the work, but it was like 130 or 40% of the work. It was so much new learning for us as a team to hold that. And what we found is we're trickling down, and we had second and third graders who actually wanted to compete, you know, in other countries. And so we allowed them to do that, and we'll continue to allow the little ones do online competition as well. We've been calling them our shooting stars. because so we're having the trickle down effect, but 6th through 12th grade is really the primary age range for competition.
Yeah.
And our speakers, for the most part, are chosen for that age group.
So here's my question. So you started in 2015. So
yep.
You've had enough time for the kids, for the earlier kids from 2015, to go on through high school and start college. Do you have any way to follow them or get feedback to see if they're going into any of the STEM fields in later years in high school and college?
Yes. We're big believers in pre and post surveys and metrics and tracking as much as we can with when our kids go after they finish high school, but we've gotten great feedback in that regard. We've had quite a few students go on to college to focus on aerospace engineering in particular. And in fact, it's interesting that you say that. We have a student, we actually just talked to him last week to formally invite him. This year in March at Cities in Space, we're going to give our first launch award, which is our first alumni award. And this is a student that started competing with us in 2016 and has gone on to be accepted to Carnegie Mellon for aerospace engineering. And so he'll be receiving our first official alumni award. And then he will join with our other mentors at the conference and walk around and support those younger than him and get to just bathe in the glory of all his hard work. These kids really astound me. They constantly, you know, I would say exceed what I'm expecting. And we bring in mentors from University of Texas Rocket and Engineering Lab, Houston Tillotson Department of Natural Sciences and Environmental Justice. So in addition to having engagement with these space industry professionals, we really want them to have access to college students and sometimes graduate students who can also mentor them along. So they can, these kids, like I said, you know, we're supporting that pipeline so they can talk to these kids and these leaders in the industry and go, oh, that's what I want to do when I finish school. I want to go do this. I want to go to school here and I want to go work here and have my own business here. So it's really great to have that mentorship piece and celebrate those kids that continue pursuing their dreams for space.
You have an email, excuse me, from Todd in San Diego, and he says, do the teachers come with the kids, and do they have any background in space settlement or any of the related topics, or how do the teachers fit in?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and thank you for that. Being in education of, I think now it's 25 years, feel old, I have such high respect and love for teachers, and I have been a teacher, and I really want to make this conference as easy and joyful and fun and exploratory for the teachers as well as the students, because they do indeed bring their teams. We suggest team size of around 10 students, and so some teachers will bring more than one team, and often, you know, we'll have three teachers with the school and three teams. So they are involved with helping their students and their teams throughout the school year prepare for Cities in Space. We've had an amazing school in Austin actually receive a grant to do a complete project-based learning year. This was a couple of years ago, where they were supported for their eighth graders for Cities in Space. And so all of their subjects really focused on space and space settlement. And then when they did all their research and came with their projects, they could tie in all these different aspects of study to, you know, their projects. And they won. they were some of the winners. But the teachers get very involved, and a lot of the teachers, you know, go work with, you know, NASA-based summer camps and becoming space teachers. We get a lot of science and astronomy teachers. So what we found is teachers really enjoy the day and really look forward to coming back like the students do. We continually have growth of new schools, but we also have a lot of returning schools, which is just what we want.
Do the kids, I guess what I'm trying to find out is, do they see SpaceX settlement and living in space as sort of a just a natural extension of what they're doing right now, or does it seem like a really big hurdle and may or may not ever happen, but it interests them? I'm just wondering if the younger they are, perhaps they just see it more as an extension of what's going on right now, and they almost take it for granted.
Yeah, you know, I've thought about that a lot. I've seen a lot of, I guess you could say, evolution of that. I've heard people talk about the giggle effect.
Uh-huh.
And when I first started talking to schools in 2015, there was a lot of giggling. And even it never failed. A couple teachers would come up to me very, very politely, you know, and kind of pull me around the corner and say, "I'm sorry, but is this real?" and it just never failed. I would say that first year to 2 years, there was a lot of that. And I've really, really watched that change. I mean, drastically change, where I think, you know, students now start really, they do see that as this is an option. This is an opportunity. This is an extension. And I do think that, yes, probably the younger down that goes. So basically, as our years pursue on with Cities in Space and our other events, we're going to see more and more children moving into middle school and high school that they are preparing for this, which is what we want. You know, we want to create amazing space settlers who are great leaders, who are great collaborators, who have super academic skills and knowledge, but also wisdom and empathy, who can really lead people into a great world beyond, right?
Right. When I began my doctoral dissertation, which was in the late 90s, and it took me to about 2001 to finish it, and most of it was on space tourism. And when people would ask me what you're doing, and I said space tourism and expanding commercial space, is 100% giggle factor. 100%.
Yeah.
And the university didn't even want to approve it. But I had a guy from Stanford and a guy from Boeing Commercial Space on my committee, and they convinced them that it was real. And they thought if Boeing was there and Stanford was willing to sign off on me, that they would do so as well. By the time I finished in 2001, there had actually been some Time Magazine and Newsweek, not great aerospace publications, as you can well imagine, but there had been front page articles, cover articles, on making space tourism serious. So by then, the giggle factor was already disappearing, and then, of course, the XPRIZE really helped it disappear, but it wasn't won until 2004. And about then, most of the giggle factor was gone, but I would say I dealt with it for close to 8 years, and I don't encounter it hardly all anymore. I think it's gone, but I do have another question for you about settlement, and this is from Beverly in Seattle, and she says, when your kids talk about space settlement, are they looking at settlement like on a planet surface, like the moon or Mars, or are they knowledgeable about O'Neillian free space settlements that would spin at 1G, or is this all too technical and too advanced for them, and they just talk about space regardless of location?
That's an excellent question, and thank you, Beverly. You know, when we first started having Cities in Space, we strictly made it for their choices to be moon, Mars, or free space. So we always included free space since the beginning. But like I said, these kids continue to exceed expectations and reach out with questions or ask for a volunteer mentor while they're working on their projects that we connect them to. And so they have chosen, I've watched our student body choose different locations that now we are much more flexible and open-minded because they just keep pushing the envelope, which is exactly what we want them to do. So, yes, there are going to be teams where this is really new information, but there are also the teams who are vastly knowledgeable, are ready. And we see that with a lot of the high schools in particular. So we let them run with it, and they always impress us and the judges.
Is there any way to judge, like, the percentage of students interested in this versus the overall percentage of kids in that grade? Is there, like, are we talking about 2% of the kids have an interest in this or 15% of the kids overall for their age group? Is there any way to know that?
You know, like I said, we do our pre and post surveys, but this is strictly for the teams that registered. Quite often, I mean, I'm just kind of running through my head. It really varies wildly. We have a couple schools where, like, that are smaller, like the Ann Richards School for Young Women Leaders. They've competed for several years in a row, and quite often, most of their eighth graders will compete. But then there are other schools who, just a smaller percentage, who are perhaps, you know, really active in science or astronomy clubs and, you know, a couple teams form. So it does vary quite wildly, I will say. But, yeah, there are quite a few teachers who are, like, let's say, eighth or ninth grade science teachers who really, they'll open up the call and then have an enormous amount of their students want to come and really dive in. And that's one of the other really beautiful things about, you know, thinking of it, even though it is a competition, we do believe in healthy competition, but we also really want these kids to find each other, because I think, you know, as a space enthusiast, and I'm sure you can relate, David, you know, it's important for you to be able to find your people. So we'll have schools call us or teachers call me and say, you know, my students want to practice with another team before the event. And so we'll connect them to another school across the state or across town or across the U.S., and they can practice virtually together. So by the time they actually show up at Cities in Space, there's already a community brewing. And, you know, then we do a lot of icebreaker things too, which really encourage them to come back because they've made friends, you know.
Absolutely. Listeners, our phone lines are available if you would like to call and talk to Holly. Maybe you have a kid who you think might be interested and you want to see how to get him or her interested. 1-866-687-7223 is our phone number, and you can also continue to use email drspace@thespaceshow.com. Paul is in New York, and he says, do you have any plans to take your show on the road and do this in other cities other than Austin?
We would love to. We have done other events, smaller Cities in Space workshops and summits in other parts of the country as well as outside of the country. In an ideal world, we would, you know, have the resources and ability to be able to have multiple Cities in Space or events throughout the academic year. One thing we're really hoping to achieve over this next year to 2 years is during the pandemic, we had always had the mission to have an academy so we could have more in-depth industry engagement between our students and leaders, and we decided since we're virtual, let's also launch our academy, which consisted of several smaller micro-challenges is what we chose to call them. And we also hosted some stellar talks for the students to talk to industry professionals. But the academy is going to probably be our next big step to have more accessibility, because that is so key for us. And what that will look like is students will be invited to compete in these micro-challenges. They're usually around 6 to 7 weeks long. And for example, we had the natural science department head at Houston Tillotson, also the head of the Dumpster Project, which is a sustainability project in Austin, Texas, as well as Morgan Irons, chief scientist with Deep Space Agriculture, to do a footprint challenge on sustainability when living on Mars. And so the students got to jump in, and every week we would have an open Zoom call with the students and teachers and these professionals running the challenge. And then we would have a little kind of micro event announcing the winners and send out awards and things like STEM kits. So I think that's probably our next step of where we're headed. But we love any opportunities for engagement we can have.
In terms of networking, do the kids, do you know if they stay in touch with each other after the big event, even if they're from around the country? Do they get an opportunity to you know, create bonds and keep them through high school and maybe even longer? Can you tell that?
I think there have been some, but, you know, that I love that question, because we began hosting leadership summits a couple years ago. Well, I guess right before the pandemic hit, with our last in-person leadership summit, where we invited the team leader students for the Cities in Space teams to come to our event. And then we would do these round tables. We brought in about 12 industry professionals in space. And the students would rotate together, and they'd get to share their projects and get feedback, and then they would take it back to their schools and the teachers and, you know, be the leaders for their teams. But we had a lot of discussions about what do you want, because every Cities in Space we have, we're always adapting. We want the students and the teachers to move us. So we're always switching and adapting. And the biggest thing the students said is, we want to be forced into more discomfort, being pressured into getting to know each other. Because I did all these things to shake it up, like right when they got there, they had to, you know, I set it up where they had to go sit with people they didn't know. And continuously students have been like, that's great. Our last in-person Cities in Space event, you know, Houston Tillotson is where we're having it this March. It's where we had our last in-person event. It's a really well-established, well-respected HBCU in Austin. They gave us the whole green of their campus, and there was so much more ability to socialize in that environment that we'll be going back there, and students still want even more opportunity to get closer to their peers from other schools. So we're setting Cities in Space up a little more differently than before in years past by having even more engagement on the green now that we have this really wonderful open space. So they'll be getting tours of solar gardens and dumpster project and robotics. And I believe Trell is going to be doing all sorts of things for their rocket and engineering lab out on the green. And we're going to structure it so they, you know, can have that opportunity to get closer to each other if they want to. We try to make a really kinesthetic conference, so they listen to a speaker kind of TEDx style and then get up and go do some hands-on stuff, and then a speaker hands-on stuff. So they're moving and their brains stay alive and awake.
You have a caller on hold. Hi, caller. Welcome to our program today. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is Marshall, usual place. My key thing is I'm a retired software engineer, and I spent a lot of time working on control systems. And being out in the countryside, I am interested in farming. So has there been any projects where they talked about environmental controls for growing crops on the different space stations?
That's a lovely question. We have had, I think I just mentioned Morgan Irons, chief scientist of deep space ecology. I think I said agriculture. Sorry. Deep space ecology. She has talked some about that. Our students really adore her. She's been a speaker more than once for us. And she was one of the speakers that ran our first high school micro challenge with the Academy last year. We think that's really important content, and also how can that data and that knowledge be transferred to Mars or other, you know, free space, you know, habitats.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the fun things that I always came up with in my career was the engineering of the computer systems. How does the computer system, how much of a computer system do you have to get the kind of controls that you need to actually make things work? And it was a big, wide, what would you call it, fudge factor in many projects. In fact, several projects failed because we just couldn't get enough computer power onto the problem. Has anybody ever talked about how to, you know, design the computer systems?
I would have to, if I had my team in front of me here, I would be looking at them going, have we done that? But I don't think that specific item, but we do have computer scientists come and take part in Cities in Space, so that's something really worth investigating. Thank you for that.
Well, I'm kind of an expert on the obscure software problems, so thank you for the call, and until next time.
Thank you, Marshall. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Morgan Irons has been on the space shuttle. Last time she was on was 2019, so I probably should catch up with her. So
yeah, such a lovely and brilliant mind. We highly respect her. She's wonderful.
What are the qualifications for the students to participate, and what do you have to do, or how do you choose a winner? On what criteria does somebody win, if win is the correct word?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we do have the requirements and criteria on our website. It's pretty accessible. If you just go to the Cities in Space 2023 page, and they have size restrictions, and they are to build a habitat that is built for 1,000 people, but with the ability to grow. And then there are numerous options and ideas in those requirements. They have the choice to do a three-dimensional project that they can carry and bring to do their presentation, or they can create a video using, you know, Kerbal or Maya, or we have a list of options for them to use. And then they all have a written work that they give to us as well. And then our director of operations, Amos Bahana, he is in charge of our wonderful judges that come and volunteer and give their time. And they all have tablets and rubrics. And the one tricky thing, but it's still worth it, in my opinion, is because we really support project-based learning and allowing these students to present on a passion of the teams, right? Even though they have the same physical requirements, they can present on an aspect of their thriving settlement, right? So that can be tricky with winners. And so We do have first and second place winners, but then we also do give acknowledgement and honorable mentions for the arts and social sciences and environmental issues and things like that. It's not one of those competitions where everyone goes home a winner at all, but we do give a few awards out just due to the nature of the flexibility of the competition, if that makes sense.
Do you think most of the kids want to go to space and live on a space settlement, or this is more or less an interesting project for them and maybe something down the road for their career? Can you tell if they actually want to be a space settler, if that's what you would call someone living in space?
I think the majority of our students want to pursue a career in the space industry. And more every year, we see students that do indeed want to live off-world. We see a growing trend in that because, like we were talking about earlier, that giggle factor has died down. As the younger minds move up, it's becoming more and more of a reality, right? You know, it's a far cry from, like, us being sad when, like, the shuttle closed down in 2011. But then we begin to see this really amped up rise in commercial space and new collaborations, and it's just been moving fast ever since. And so I think we will continue to see, you know, almost all of the students that come to Cities in Space wanting to be involved in the industry, but more and more and more going, that's going to be me that's living out there. So that's why we try to get really great speakers who will really encourage them and talk to them about their options, you know.
Dr. Sherry Bell has a question for you via email.
Dr. Bell!
Dr. Sherry, yes, yes, yes. She's my Las Vegas buddy. So she has several questions. I'll just read it all, and then if you forget some of them, I'll chime in and remind you. So she wants to know what the students are most interested in, including nuts and bolts, arts and social, which is most on their minds as important, what has been the most surprising new idea or concept?
Oh, my gosh. All right, Dr. Sherry Bell. Well, I think I understand those questions pretty cut and dry. So we have had a high amount of students involved in engineering and architecture. Though this isn't a robotics competition, students are also really into mining opportunities. So we've seen them incorporate that into their settlements. Arts and social sciences is also a really big part of Cities in Space, as I've already talked about. And so we've had a lot of students who are interested in design utilization, but we've also had students who, I think, starting at the very first Cities in Space in 2015, students talking about wanting to be therapists and counselors for the new habitats on another planet or in free space, helping them to learn how to adapt into a new situation. So students have been highly aware of this since our very first days. What are the other questions? Would you tell me what I still need to know?
What is most on mind as important, and what has been the most surprising new idea or concept?
I think that Mars has been very, very much on people's mind the past couple of years. And so students have been more Mars focused than moon focused in a lot of ways. But now I'll be very curious to see if we make a shift for that. But so in turn, we've seen a lot of ideas on how we're going to live on Mars. We've seen a lot of thoughts on lava tubes and how we're going to have vegetation and things like that. Those have been some really interesting and probably to be expected projects. We've also watched some pretty amazing ideas about how we're going to really utilize rooms for habitats as multi-purpose spaces. One reason we love to partner up with this Austin-based sustainability project, the Dumpster Project, led by Dr. Amanda Massino, is because they take dumpsters and they create small habitats. This has many purposes. This often organizations talk about sustainability, obviously, but also talk about homelessness. So we will be bringing one of those dumpsters for the students. They're really lovely. I've climbed in several now. They're all finished out with electricity, solar-powered electricity, and beds and little kitchen areas. So students have been, I think, most impressive with thinking about tight spaces for getting started with this and how each space can, like, serve many, many purposes. So I've watched them get much more thoughtful and practical over the past few years versus, oh, we're going to have this huge space, which we know is probably not going to be happening right away when we're talking about communities living off-world.
So I have a great job that nobody thinks about for space settlement.
And, oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, so I will announce it on this show, although I have alluded to it before. I seriously do believe that at some point in the space settlement timeline, not at first, but at some point, humans will manage to have their pets with them. So I'm thinking, number one, there will need to be veterinarian services, maybe even boarding facilities or something like that for people living in space, but also dog trainers that know how to train and work with pets and get them accustomed to and using microgravity and more confined spaces than what they probably have on Earth. And I think Martian pet trainers or lunar pet trainers for down the road would be an absolutely fabulous career.
I love that so much. And, you know, I have heard people occasionally talk about this, and I've even seen it listed at conferences here and there, and I would love to have my little furry friend with me. So it's now, what size, though? Would they have to be very small pets, right?
Well, I don't know.
It happened to chihuahuas here, I think.
I don't know. I mean, remember, you know, the cost of getting them up there, but, you know, who knows? They may not do well, and they may not like going up on a rocket ship. There's a whole lot of factors there, and, of course, the dog can't really consent. So, you know, if you're into wanting consent and you value animals, of course, a lot of things we do with dogs, they don't consent. They probably don't consent to go get rabies shots and stuff like
right.
that. But I don't know. I have a husky, and you know, if I wanted to live in space and I thought it was safe for a dog to live in space, I absolutely could not imagine going up there to live without my husky. And so that's a 70-pound dog. And that'd be great if there was someone up there that could teach both the dog and me how to be in a microgravity environment or in more confined spaces or whatever the environment was going to be in space. I think it'd be a great profession, but it won't be at first, obviously. Space settlement will have to evolve and become more mature for something like that to develop. But
right.
worth thinking about and having great fantasies about.
Yeah, I love that idea. I love that idea. You know, one thing I did want to say, I know that we are closing in on our hour. If you are a teacher and looking to come, you know, one thing that is a huge part of our mission is we believe in inclusivity. Like, we want to make this accessible to everyone. And we do not charge much for our teams to come, and we also feed them lunch and snacks, teachers included. and give them swag bags. But we also have financial aid available, and we do cap how much schools can spend on their projects because we want equal opportunity for this competition. But I just want any teachers who might be listening to know that if you're thinking about coming but not sure, all you have to do is reach out and we will find a way to make that happen.
Okay. You have another caller on the line. Hi, caller.
Right.
Welcome to our program today. Who are you and where are you, please?
Hey, David. It's John Josie in Fremont, California.
Hi, John. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Holly, it was great meeting you at ISDC, and I'm glad that we got David to invite you on the show.
Yes. Hi, John. It's great to hear from you.
Yeah. So this is a really, really exciting project that you've got going here, and I have a couple of questions. I was just wondering, you mentioned mentors in the program.
Yes.
How are they trained? What materials do you put together for them? And, how does that work?
Well, it's not quite so formal as putting materials together to train mentors. What it is more consistent of is, so, for example, our college students, right? We will be, I've already met with the head of UT Rocket and Engineering Lab and the head of the science department with UT. We have a knowledge bank and kind of the data we've gathered together of how we want their students to help our students, right? But we also have so many connections, STEAM Space has so many connections throughout our team of experts in different fields that when a student says, we really want to focus on, you know, again, I think I'll use Morgan Irons. We want to focus on agriculture as that big key point of our presentation. Is there anyone we can talk to? Yes. As a matter of fact, we have someone. Let's see if she's available. And so we'll do it more of a personal connection basis versus like a formalized form and going through those kind of, not really bureaucratic, but it's all through personal connection and reaching out. Basically.
Got it.
And then our judges,
okay.
Many of them have come multiple years in a row. And then some of our wonderful companies we've worked with will send some of their employees as well to be judges. And these are generally rocket companies and space industry companies. But the mentorship is really about the personal connection. The teacher reaches out to me. I reach out to the expert, and then connect them together. Rachel Tillman with Viking Mars Mission Education Project, she's been a mentor to students and actually, you know, taken mentorship from multiple teams at times through the years and has been very generous with her time because she has such a vast knowledge of history for the Viking Project.
Yeah, she's been on the show a couple of times as well. So.
Yeah, so you mentioned some criteria for the competitions, sizes of settlements and that sort of thing. What about human factors and limitations? You know, do you talk about radiation? Do you talk about the gravity prescription?
And they do, and primarily that gets talked about in their written work, and depending on their presentation depends on the depth and extent of how much they talk about it. And we find that it gets more elaborate and detailed the older the student gets. So we do find though, however, our fourth grade students, our young pioneers, do still talk about those things quite a bit. They're very well taught by their teachers. These teachers for particularly Manor ISD outside of Austin does an amazing job with their DT program for these little kiddos.
Is there a kind of an even mix between girls and boys in this program. I would like to see a lot more women come into the aerospace industry, and I was just curious if there's an equal amount of interest.
Well, you did just hit my happy heart button right there. Yes. So one thing we are really, really proud of and is that since 2015, we've hosted over 60% girls in our student body. It is high female-based. We even had a discussion several years ago about should we make this a girls-only event, but that's really not our mission, you know. Our mission is all-inclusive and breaking down all barriers, whether it's gender identity or economics or ethnicity. So, but we have still consistently hosted over 60% girls every year.
Awesome.
So we try to get speakers, you know, the goal usually is half female, half male identified for our speakers for Cities in Space. Sometimes it gets a little wobbly, but that's our general intention. So there's equal representation for our kids.
Great. What's your outreach how do you reach out to teachers? Is it just some sort of advertising or networking, or how do you engage teachers to come on board?
Again, kind of like our mentoring question you ask, we really have a pretty grassroots approach. We do some social media marketing a few weeks before our event for wider knowledge, because, you know, in 2018 we did start having international participation, which is great. But we send out emails primarily focused on, you know, domestic, and also we're doing a pretty heavy emphasis on Texas and commercial space hubs this year. But then we pick up the phone a lot. We go visit schools. When we can, we try to do, you know, school events that are, you know, in Texas or not too far from us, where our whole team is based in Austin. So we do what we can to have personal engagement. But yeah, a lot of it is very personal. And a lot of our teachers who have chosen to come back year after year to Cities in Space, they are really great about also spreading the word. And we're very thankful for that. So it's really grown quite organically.
What about music? And you talked a little bit about arts, but does anyone talk about you know, some of the more soft social sciences? You mentioned law, but I'm just wondering, you know, I mean, we're going to need music in space. We're going to need artists to come up and interpret, you know, space to the general masses. I'm just wondering how that's figured into your competition.
Yeah, we wholeheartedly believe in that, especially for that keyword thriving. Every year for the past, I would say, oh gosh, many years, we've had a musical experience for the students. Actually, a younger musician, Nate Zivin, has come, and he's created a whole kind of slideshow video of space that he curated, and then he's a composer, and he has this kind of Brian Eno-esque style, and he does a musical performance for the students. We also generally work with other nonprofits and other industries to do a section on film, so that's been really wonderful, whether we've worked with SciArt Exchange to have art exhibits and discuss their film competitions. We've worked with other companies outside of California who have worked in the space industry, in the film industry on space films. So, yeah, film is going to be really important, actually, for many, many reasons, documenting experiences going out and serving and the experiences of living there, but also in the creative arts as well. So we're very big advocates in those softer skills and do not see them as luxuries, but see them as necessities for a thriving community.
Yeah, any filking going on after hours?
Any what? What? What?
Filking.
What is filking?
Oh, you don't know what a filk is? Okay.
No, and spell it. Whoa. Spell it for us.
At science fiction conferences and space conferences, people who had an artistic and musical bent would get together afterwards and sing space folk songs, and it's called filk.
How do you spell it? Spell it, John.
F-I-L-K. F-I-L-K.
I've never heard of it or seen it at a conference.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Sure. Yeah. Frank,
I would love that. Like, now that we'll have our second year where we have a whole university campus green for these, you know, children to be contained, but also have such a great, an intimate experience getting to find each other. I bet we'll start slowly having these little groups to do things like that.
So
I think that would be fantastic. I say yes.
So you'll have the space version of sitting around the campfire singing Kumbaya, but a space song. Is that right, John?
No,
yeah.
It's going to way cooler.
Yeah, so it's a combination of fans and folk. So that's where the filk came in.
Okay.
So,
Never heard of it.
It's big. I think it was going on at those space access societies late at night, David.
Well, because I don't drink and I don't do the late night party, I probably did miss it. But I don't do the happy hour stuff very. I'm not into all of that. So, I probably did miss it. So,
I've been.
Why don't you arrange a space show filking session? And let's see what you get for participants.
Yeah, well, I've been doing space haikus recently, so that'll be fun.
Well,
we can snap our fingers too while you do your haiku.
Yeah, but
and say yes.
I really think you need to arrange a space show filking program for open lines, and. I'll talk to you about that later. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, Holly, it's been an absolute pleasure. So good luck, and I'll be logging onto the website to see if I might want to start engaging a little bit more.
Thank you, John. So,
thank you.
Wonderful. And hopefully I'll see you at the next ISDC in Dallas.
I'll be there.
Yeah, and I'm planning to be there, too, so hopefully it
wonderful.
Will work out. Thank you, John. And by the way, listeners, John is the one who introduced me to Holly. So thank you, John, for helping to set this program up, and I appreciate the introduction.
You're welcome.
And now
I'll
learned
talk to you soon, David.
Cooking.
Say again, please, John.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, yes, I will. Okay, thank you, John. Holly, we are at the hour, and that even includes the amount of time I lost by my screw-up. So, if anybody else wants to call, you can hurry up and do so. You know, the opportunity is still there real quickly, 866-687-7223. It's also still there if you have an email that you would like to get in, drspace@thespaceshow.com. Holly, what triggered you down the road before 2015 or whenever to do all of this? What was the trigger that kicked it off?
Okay. Well, there's a little bit of a prelude to that trigger, and that is that I really attribute my love and passion for space and STEAM to my family. My father was a mathematician, a lawyer, and an artist. And my mother was an amateur astronomer and an artist and a musician. And so I was always very interested in science and art together. And I always loved the stars. And then I think really when 2011 happened and the shuttle system began closing, you know, we all felt very sad. But then, like I said before, this really new life started breathing into space with the commercial industry pushing and then these government collaborations happening. And then there was a lot of movement into Texas. And I think that was my trigger, was right at the turn of the year in 2015. I think it was in January or February. I was watching an interview on TV about rocket companies moving into Texas, and it just was like clear as day that I wanted to do this. I felt like all my passions for progressive education, for the maker community, for the arts, for I had also taught children's engineering, all these things and my love of space just kind of came together. It was a very distinct moment, and I remember looking at my family saying, this is what I want to do. And it was literally 6 weeks after that, I, you know, made connections really kind of serendipitously, was invited to start this first event, Creating Cities in Space, and it just took off from there. It's funny how you can't get what you want until you know what you want, but once you know what you want, often it just goes poof here. And we've just been pushing ourselves and having that happen ever since.
Well, and you have done well, clearly. So the community thanks you for that as well. Let's see. I think you may have one more.
Well, I want to thank my team, because I could never, ever do this on my own. I have a beautiful, hardworking, ethical, impeccable team who I trust immensely and have so much respect for. So I feel very fortunate to have them surrounded by me.
So John, who was just talking to you, sent his free space haiku to be shared on air. I guess he wants to share it on it. So knowing, John, that we renamed him from Fremont John to Free Space John because he's a strong advocate of free space and O'Neill Colony. Here is his haiku. I'll see if I can read it in the kind of rhythm and meaning that he probably intends it to be read. Moon, Mars, or free space? Where can humans reproduce? O'Neill had answer. So what do you think of that one?
Well, I think that's pretty lovely, and I think O'Neill certainly did have a lot of answers. Yeah, what a visionary, and I wish he could see, you know, how far we've come and how many of his ideas are now, you know, moving into existence. What a visionary.
Well, maybe he can. You never know. So
maybe he can, but that's an awesome haiku. I approve. I'm snapping. there you go.
Okay. John, if you have more, post them on the blog since we're about to end our program today. But thank you. Any concluding comments, anything we haven't talked about, anything you want to bring to our attention?
I think I should say that this year, Cities in Space will be held on March 24th. In Austin, Texas. It's an all-day event, and if you think you might like to bring a school, or if you would like to be checking in about being a professional judge or volunteer, please reach out to us. You can contact us through our website, which is on the Space Show's website, and we would love to hear from you. But I'm just so honored I got to be on your show, David. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Well, it has been, and it's been great talking to you, and I'll look forward to following up with you in subsequent years, because my suspicion is it's only going to grow and get better and the quality of student work will get better as well, and it's going to be very exciting. And good for you for doing this, and good for your team. Let's not forget your team. But if I were wearing a hat, I would tip it to you. So there you go. And
well, thank you so much.
We'll look forward to meeting you in person at ISDC in Texas in a couple of months. And
yeah, that's going to be a great event in Frisco, Texas, right outside of Dallas. It's going to be wonderful.
Do you have something planned for that event?
We are setting up some wonderful speakers, and I believe we are going to have even more student engagement and opportunity. There are some really wonderful educational things happening that happen every year at ISDC with some amazing educational leaders with the NSF, and I think there will be even more of that happening this year in Dallas. So, you know, we plan for it to be a really exciting and invigorating event to get even more people excited about space. I know I'm excited, and so I can't wait to be there. But first things first, get cities in space, and then go on to Dallas. It's going to be a very busy and very fun and space-filled spring.
Do you run a track at ISDC? Is there a track for space education and outreach like what you do?
Last May, I did speak, I think it was the Mini Roads to Space. That's often where the education tracks are put. But then there are other additional education events and engagement opportunities that will be happening there. Like I said, they've already put up, you know, the schedule that will just be continued to be added to over the coming weeks. So please check it out and see if there are some opportunities there that you would like to visit and show. I think I will be speaking here and there some, but, you know, that is yet to be seen just how much, but I think probably a little bit.
Okay.
So thank you for asking.
Okay. We'll look forward to talking to you then. Listeners, that's it for today, and we thank you very much for being with us today. And Mars Society is next on Tuesday, and then Hotel Mars on Finding Organics on Mars with Perseverance. That's Wednesday. Dr. Joel Sercell of Space Astra on Friday, and Frank Slazer of the Coalition for Deep Space Exploration on Sunday. Everybody have a great week. Make it safe. Make it count. Always make it count. And always on the Space Show, keep looking up. Goodbye from Holly, David, and the Space Show.
Thank you. Bye.